and Arthur Godfrey time.
Ah, it seems like old times. Max McGrath is here. With two of his more beautiful children. And Richard Hayes and the Godfrey men with Jerry Alters. He being the child of all of them. Do you have to tell me about these lovely critters, Max? You have two daughters and one son, right?
Yes, my daughter's here, Kathy, who's 17, and Christy, who's 15. And they're in New York, and all that during spring vacation, looking around, spending the old man's money. Rather judiciously, I should add.
They're beautiful critters. Are they interested in our profession at all?
Well, I think both of them, when they were about the second grade, they came home and said, "Daddy, Daddy, we're in a school play." I knock them across the room. I say, "How about your typing class, you know, your bookkeeping?" No, I don't know, Arthur.
You knocked it out of them,
yeah,
huh?
They've been exposed to the business, and I suppose if they want to go into it, they'll have my blessing.
Well, if they have your talent, too, they have their mother's beauty, I see.
Yes, that's fortunate it worked out that way.
That's always nice, isn't
sure.
it?
Sure it is. Sure. They have my thumbprint.
I don't know. With two daughters and a lovely wife, you ought to know more about handling a woman. Don't you remember the song that Jay Lerner and Fred Lowe wrote in Camelot? How to handle a woman. There's a way, said a wise old man. It's a way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole began. Well, do I flatter her? I begged him answer. Do I threaten or cajole or plead? Do I brood or do I play the gay romancer? Said he, smiling. No, indeed. How to handle a woman? Mark me well. I will tell you, sir. The way to handle a woman is to love her. Just love her. They never did a more beautiful thing, you know, those two guys.
It's a great piece of writing.
Yeah. That's so true. How to handle a woman. Just love her.
Take her to movies once in a while.
Yeah, and offer to dry the dishes. Be a little practical. Bring her home a bottle of water. I'm talking about Mountain Valley water.
Oh.
The excellent natural spring water from Hot Springs, Arkansas. This is the one water you should consider when you want a wonderful lift from water. Yeah, you know, this clean drinking water is getting scarce in the world. And this is some of the best. The very best. I expect the time will come when... maybe in the lifetimes of your lovely daughters, when they'd give their diamonds for just one glass of this. Going to be very scarce. Mountain Valley water. It is the most delicious. And just in case you're not feeling too good today, let me fix you. This is the day that you turn in the income tax.
Gulp.
This is the last one. This is called National Hostility Day. We're celebrating the year 1960. As we go down the last 27 days of this program. 1960 was the 15th year of this program. And it was in that year that Gary Powers was shot down. Gary Powers was shot down in the Soviet Union on the 1st of May in a U-2 reconnaissance plane.
Mm. And that was the first anybody ever heard of a U-2 reconnaissance plane.
Yes, it had been kept nice and quiet outside of the service for a long time. That's quite a piece of aircraft that we don't talk too much about. Let's see, what else was there? Oh, the Israeli agents got a hold of Adolf Eichmann down in Argentina. This was the year, 1960, when President Eisenhower barred almost all remaining Cuban sugar imports. And I guess that still holds, doesn't it? We don't import
any. I believe
so, yeah. We don't get any from Cuba, do we? I'm so sorry that that place is, you know, that we're in that kind of a mess with Cuba. Gosh, in the old days, Havana was the place, man. Did you ever get there?
No, never did.
Oh, man, that was the place to go. It was such a beautiful Nacional Hotel and the Havana Yacht Club. Beautiful water, like the Bahamas, you know. It was quite the place. It's a pity that it's all gone down the pike. I hope someday they straighten that mess out. It's a hard thing for me to figure how two things happened. How Cuba wasn't made part of the U.S. and the Bahamas. I wonder why. Here they are, we got one of them 50 miles off of Miami Beach. Bimini. And those islands could have belonged to us.
No, they must both, in both cases, go back to those big naval powers in England and Spain. At that time, the USA didn't have many.
I suppose. Well, as it is, I hope that the Bahamians will be smart and keep those islands clean the way they are and build fish farms all around those reefs. Because about 20 years from now, people in the U.S. are going to go over there begging for them. They could grow enough fish in that place if they built the farms, the fish farms on the ocean, to feed the whole country. But they're not doing it. They're building hotels for tourists instead. And I've tried to talk them out of it for 10 years, but I get no place because the premier, bless his heart, is also commissioner of tourism.
Yeah, that's their industry.
Yeah, but it could be feeding the world. Their ocean is clear, beautiful, clean, just like it used to be. Will be for some time. Well, we need some entertainment here. What do you got from 1960, Dick? Anything?
Yeah, I've got a pretty song that Dmitri Tiomkin wrote.
Oh, one of my favorite guys. I wish he'd come back and talk, because he has an accent that just is out of this world.
the green leaves of summer are calling me home. Now the green leaves of summer are calling me home.
Gee, that was lovely, Dimitri.
Beautiful, Ricky.
Thank you, Boris.
I wish he'd come back and see us again before we go off the air. He was a lot of fun. I loved that guy. Max, what do you got for us?
Oh?
Besides your call.
Get rid of that.
A few germs.
Arthur, this is kind of interesting. I got a letter through your office a couple of weeks ago from Mr. Paul Larson, who's program director of WNEB. I don't know where that is. Do you know where that is?
Nebraska, probably. Something.
Sounds like Nebraska, doesn't it? Tommy's looking it up. Anyway, he's a member of the Titanic Club. And speaking of anniversaries here, the Titanic apparently went down on April 15th in 1912. And this song was one of the favorites. As a matter of fact, it was the favorite song of the people on board the Titanic. This is a bit of a morbid kind of dedication. But the guy wrote and asked if I would do this song on April 15th and dedicate it to the people who went down on the Titanic. So, through the magic radio, I'll filter out my laryngitis and do the Cubanola glide.
Oh!
Way down in Cuba where skies are clear and it is summertime all through the year, they got the loveliest dance I know. Come along, honey, baby, and I'll show you. Get away closer, baby, squeeze me in tight. Ragged, tag it to the left and then the right. Shake it up, side by side. Cuddle right up to me as we glide. Ain't it entrancing when you are dancing the fat Cubanola glide? Slide, keep on the sliding, honey, look into your baby's eyes. Throw your arms around me, ain't you glad you found me? Tease, loving and moving, oh, baby, what are you doing? Ride to heaven by your baby's side when you do the Cubanola glide.
I am so crazy about that stuff. That's Max Morav, one of the most delightful of the entertainers extant.
You know, a number of years ago, speaking of the Titanic, oh, I guess it's about 15 years ago, somebody came out with an album of songs, really great songs, they called Ill-Timed Songs. And I had a thing in that way.
I know that. I know the guy that did that album. Yeah. He's a guy that used to play with me out in Vegas named Spencer Quinn. Spencer Quinn wrote that. It was called, well, it was President Dewey, we salute you.
Yeah. Or the Titanic,
and,
I remember that
there was one about the Titanic.
Bon voyage to you, new Titanic. You're the greatest little ship on the sea. Bon voyage to you, new Titanic. Say hello to the Statue of Liberty to wish you
Do we have to hear it all?
Well, yeah, there's a good lyric. To wish you bon voyage would be unthinkable. We know at what you're costing, you're unsinkable. Bon voyage to you, New Time. That's it. The band played to the very end.
Do you remember that, boys? I want you playing as this ship goes down here on the 30th.
Yeah, but a contractor put in for overtime.
WNEB was Worcester, Massachusetts, in case you want to know. Far cry from Nebraska.
Worcester, Mass.
Worcester. I'll tell you a thing that happened in 1812. Can you imagine that, girls? They put on this number with thousands in the orchestra, and then they had thousands of troops, and people fired off cannons in the finale. What a thing. What do they call it? The overture? The overture of 1812, yeah. And I'll never forget when I first started doing a disc jockey show in Washington, D.C. for NBC, one of the program directors picked that record for 618 one morning. That's what started me off.
It gets you off, doesn't it?
It got into about an inch on the record, and I picked it up and whacked it over the mic, you know. Uh-huh. Broke it in a million pieces. They used to break in those days. And I said, that son of a gun, you think he's awake listening to that kind of crap at this hour? Heck no. I'll show you he's not awake. Hey, Burke. I said, now, if he's awake, I won't be here tomorrow. I was there. I told you, he don't listen.
I thought that's how you got to CBS.
No, I stayed with NBC for another 24 hours. Midnight in Moscow.
Man, that's vulgar.
How about that, Savarich? That's vulgar Bookman, huh?
Vulgar.
Russia's in good shape. Wonder who the heck was that comic? Do you remember him? Many, many years ago, that was his big line. When he come out on the stage, he used to say, Russia's in good shape. This was back in the days right after the revolution.
That's before my time. The only Russian comedian I remember would be guy Burt Gordon, who played the Mad Russian on the Eddie Cantor Show, remember?
Yes. Yes, he was very funny.
Mr. Auer, remember him?
That's true, yeah, in the movie, sure. Mm-hmm. He was always the disbarred Russian prince.
Yeah. And there was the phony prince, that Romanov. Mike Romanov, was such a beloved character, everybody loved him. He was as phony as a $3 bill, but everybody loved him, and he had a nice restaurant out there, beautiful wife, and very lived happily until his death not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out to be a great guy. See, no, not everybody is born to the manner to which they shall become accustomed.
Very few of us are.
We're now in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
1960. That was a bad year for me. I didn't know where I was going. That was the year when, it was just after the lobectomy. And everybody was giving me about 2 chances in 1,000 to get by. Including myself. I didn't think I was going anywhere. Why should I be lucky enough to get by? This was the year that Tex Johnson called me up, knowing that I was down in the dumps, and says, hey, how would you like to go with me when I deliver the first 707 to Air India? And I said, oh, man, is the Pope a Catholic? And do I want to go? So I went as his co-pilot. And we went to London, and we took off in this 707 and delivered it to the Indian Air India. Yeah, Air India in Bombay. That's right, in Bombay. And then we were invited by the Indian government to go on a tiger hunt. And this was before the time that I realized that tigers were endangered species. But we went into the Madhya Pradesh, the inner provinces, they call them, and spent 2 weeks in there hunting tigers and never saw one.
Mm.
Took television cameras and everything, going to take pictures of all this. And after we were finished, the natives of the towns where we were hunting, by that time we had become acquainted with a few of them, and they told us that nobody had seen a tiger in that part of the country for 50 years. I'll never forget that shikari. See, in India they call them shikars and not safaris, shikaris. The shikar is the man who is in charge. And we go out at night in these jeeps, World War II jeeps, and they are equipped with 2 great big army searchlights in the back, and a couple of people all wrapped up in their saris back there. And he shined the lights through the woods as we went, and he'd say to me, have you got one up the spout? Meaning, have I got a shell in the chamber? Yes, I got one, yes. Okay, any minute now. And we'd drive through the woods, you know, through these forests. And then, every once in a while, we would pass a little oxen-drawn cart, 2-wheeled cart, containing a woman and 4 or 5 children, all by themselves, no lights, nothing, going down this road. And about the 3rd one of them I passed, it began to dawn on me, have I got one up the spout? Did she have one up the spout, you know? Big deal. They put on such a show for you as you wouldn't believe. There was this woman with her 3 or 4 little kids in a cart, mincemeat for a tiger if he wanted them. And here we are, armed to the teeth. But the woods, the forests over there, the forests people who live there, who make their livelihood cutting teak. Those are great teak forests. And they do it all by hand, and therefore there isn't much... what shall I say? Desecration of the land. They do it properly, the way it ought to be done. And the elephants come and pick up the timber and carry it out, and it's beautiful to watch. I really loved that. And I tried to teach them about using the droppings from the bullocks, the oxen, for fertilizer for their gardens. Oh, no, they wouldn't waste it like that. No. You use that for kindling for your fires, and you use it to repair your house. You wouldn't dream of putting that in the soil. Which is why they barely got their seed back when they planted a crop. And I'm told that now it's much better, that they're beginning to understand and do things a lot better than them. I hope so. But it was an education to see. Sure.
It's a good 1960 story. That all took place that year.
Yeah, only 11, 12 years ago. Have you got one up to spout?
Can't trust that Sabu, you know.
If you have, lay it on, boys.
Latest stock market news, a business merger, a new company, all may affect you, as pointed out on Today in Business, every weekday on the CBS Radio Network.